Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. Welcome. Today's news will feature key moments from Tuesday night's Candidates Forum for the Bulkley Valley Stikeen in the upcoming provincial election October 19th. The topics that garnered the most debate were SOGI in schools, or sexual orientation and gender identity education, climate change and the climate crisis, mental health, and addictions. Three of the four Bulkley Valley Stikeen candidates were in attendance. The Christian Heritage Party of BC's Rod Taylor, Sharon Hartwell for the Conservatives, and Nathan Cullen, the incumbent MLA for the BC NDP. Wilhelm Marsden, the BC Green candidate, unfortunately was stuck in Vancouver and was not able to attend. There were over 400 pre-submitted questions sent into the candidates before the forum began, and a handful of new questions were submitted during the forum, showing a strong investment by the people of the Bulkley Valley to understand their candidates and make an informed decision. And a reminder that advance polls open today in Smithers at the Curling Club. But before we get into the highlight of Tuesday's forum, Friday, October 11th is the biannual 6x6 art sale as a fundraiser for the Smithers Art Gallery. I spoke to gallerist Nicole Chernish, who's very excited about this year's show, the submissions, and the potential to really raise some excellent funds for the art gallery.
I'm Nicole. I'm the manager at the Smithers Art Gallery.
Tell me about the 6x6 sale. What's the theme of it?
What speaks to you is the theme of this year's event, and we have everything under the sun, truly. We have worms. We have Frank Ray, Councillor Frank Ray, as a member of Rush.
Yeah, what is that exactly?
So one of our fabulous artists decided to take some photos from the newspaper and has merged them together, put in some drumsticks, has created this fabulous piece. You know, I'm not encouraging people to take things off the wall, but it is as great on the back as it is on the front.
Wow.
Truly. So it, yeah.
Wow, that's really excellent.
Just
for Frank,
read the thing under here.
So it says Smithers Councillor Frank Ray led members of Rush to perform at the Air Canada Centre in Toronto in 2000. So it's What Speaks to You, which is exciting. And yeah, I'm looking around like, oh, this town has so much talent.
So much talent. And truly, I think people will be hard-pressed to figure out which ones are established artists and which ones are emerging, which ones are five. I mean, it is fantastic. And truly, the most fun you can have with these anonymous pieces. You don't know what you're getting till you pick it up.
Do you have a fundraising goal for this year?
We don't set a goal. We hope to raise about $10,000 because this does help us to stay open and provide programming to the community. So it truly all goes back into visual arts education, visual arts programming. It allows us to do all the things that we do. So we're super thrilled that the community is as supportive of it as they are.
Do you know how many submissions you have?
230-ish.
Yeah.
We had some come in last minute, so I didn't do a final tally. But yeah, any more than this, and we wouldn't be able to see them all.
Yeah.
So I do truly encourage people, come in early, come in before Friday night, write down the numbers of the ones you're interested in, because you will forget where they are in the space. And it does get a little chaotic in here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's half the fun. So the event itself is Friday evening, October 11th, from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock. Tickets are $10, which includes a beverage. We have Smithers Brewery and Bulkley Valley Booch, who are going to be available for that. There'll be food and all of the bidding fun, of course. And you can pick up your bid tickets ahead of time, pick up tickets in advance, then you can just cut the line and get right in here and start bidding immediately. So tickets at the door or in advance.
Are there any established artists that have submitted work? Because then people might be taking home.
Oh, absolutely. So we have Jacquin, who was here in our space not too long ago, Sarah Belford, Mark Thibault, Michelle Gaisley, David Harrison, whose son lives here in town.
Mm-hmm.
We have some established artists from Terrace who mailed us their pieces. Anna Cullen is one of them. So yeah, I mean, really, come on down.
Yeah, you never
take your chances. You never know what you're going to get. That's right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
First question for Nathan Cullen. How will your party manage the urgency for dealing with the climate and biodiversity crisis?
So the first thing is to acknowledge that there is a crisis, that there is a problem. We have seen, not this past forest season, fire season, which was bad, but nothing compared to the year before. 14 times more wood was burned in the province of British Columbia by fire than is milled and manufactured through all the forestry that takes place. So the scale, the intensity of the fires, the droughts, and things like atmospheric rivers is real. We have to trust in the science and not call climate change a hoax, which some leaders in this province have done. If we don't elect people that believe in science, how can we possibly expect them to act upon what the science is telling us? And when it comes to climate change, having a big polluter price on carbon, taking it off consumers if the federal government backs away, and also incentivizing us to have that green, clean economy that we know creates jobs and is less impact on our planet.
Thank you very much. This question is for Sharon Hartwell. What investments or reforms will you prioritize to improve mental health and addiction services, especially in the Bulkley Valley, that's facing rising substance abuse and safe supply challenges?
We have to recriminalize the drugs and get them off the streets. We have committed to building safe homes for these people for rehabilitation and hiring qualified professionals to help them through their addiction process. So continuing to give them drugs to do that is certainly not helping, in my opinion, and it's going to be a long, hard haul. There's going to be so many issues around the drugs. I spoke to a lady down on the fair, and she said she was looking after her grandson, who was born with autism because the mother was on drugs. So now she's going to be looking after these children. She's going to be looking after this child, and there's no supports. They can't get supports for these children. So it's a complex issue, and we have to start with rehabilitation and getting the drugs off the street and getting a place for these people to live.
Thank you. Next question is for Rod Taylor. As an MLA, you're expected to represent and speak for the entire constituency. How will you stand up for the rights and dignity of the LGBTQ2+ community throughout your term, given that queer members of our community deserve the same level of dignity, support, and acceptance? How will you personally ensure their needs and voices are heard and respected?
The God-given design for human beings is male and female. We are born either male or female, and the recent ideological shift in this category, forcing or coercing young people to make bad decisions for their health and their lives, which is causing many to have regrets after. There's a lot of detransitioners out there. But I would represent all people because we are to love one another. We're to love our neighbor as ourselves. We wouldn't pick favorites, but I would not be promoting policies that would encourage the sexual confusion that is being pushed in our schools today.
Nathan, what measures will you take to address the risks posed by climate change to Northern BC's infrastructure, such as wildfires and severe storms?
So this is an important question because if folks remember, I don't know about you, but I was not familiar with the term atmospheric river before it happened. And it's such an intense and extremely expensive weather event, north of $5 billion worth of damage done. We need to make what we build back resilient to the effects of climate change, to changing weather patterns that we see in our forestry sector, to the floods and the intensity of what comes. To Rod's earlier point, the whole idea of provincial taxation is that we're able to raise funds collectively, because I don't know how long it would take us to build a $300 million long-term care facility in Smithers if we only had taxpayers in Smithers footing the bill. What we do collectively is to the benefit of other communities, of course, and also to our own benefit. That's the idea of having a provincial government. And that's what enables us to be able to supply the funding that we've seen for a number of projects around the Bulkley Valley, which I think are really, really beneficial to our community.
Sharon wants to use her first rebuttal card.
Well, I guess I don't know if it's a rebuttal, but certainly all the years in local government that I spent, we worked very, very hard at trying to build resources up, have companies build wealth in the province so that we could have some of that return to our communities in the north. So this is another reason. It's not just tax dollars are going to do that. We want resource development funds. We want to build a strong economy. We want people back to work. We have robust things in British Columbia, especially Northwest, that we can use and get people back to work. We want strong jobs. We want a strong economy. We want people to, the communities to be prosperous again. So we can do that collectively by encouraging resource development and having people go back to work.
Okay, and this question is also for Sharon here. Given the importance of reconciliation and Indigenous land rights to many British Columbians, how does your party plan to address the long-standing issues of land ownership and historical injustice?
Well, we have committed to revisiting the DRIPA and committed to having the funding principles of UNDRIP kept. There has been two bands that have contested this in the province and said that they weren't treated fairly. We want a proper consultation process to go through where all stakeholders are asked and participate in the consultation process. After that, we can sit down and move forward with everything. We believe that economic reconciliation is the best way to do this for all parties involved.
This question is for Nathan. Medical services in BC are centralized in hubs. Our hubs are PG and Terrace. Accessing these services are a problem for those outside of the hubs. The medical bus and the north bus both arrive at the hubs late in the afternoon and leave again early the next morning, offering no opportunity for an appointment. So the buses run empty. If you use the bus, you have to stay two nights for your appointment. What is your government going to do to improve accessibility to medical services in rural BC?
I'm so glad this question was asked. I think I met the lady yesterday who was hoping to ask it. Two things. The BC North bus, funded by a previous government, we've maintained, needs to be combined with the medical health bus. We need to have it the frequency more often. There's been insurance problems that have been in the way, some resistance, but we think that path is clear now. Very proud of the new hospital that we funded, $650 million hospital in Terrace. It's outstanding. We need a new hospital here in Smithers, which is the project right after long-term care. We are next in line. We allowed other communities quite benevolently to move ahead of us in Fort St. James and Burns Lake. It is now time for Smithers to get a new hospital. The centralizing of care means that we have to have transportation. And we have committed and made possible that all the costs of getting to a medical appointment, your gas, your hotel, and flights, are now covered by the provincial government for rural residents, which is a huge benefit to a lot of families who live in the north.
Sharon, the Mineral Tenure Act has been deemed unconstitutional given the lack of consultation required to state claims in British Columbia. With the Supreme Court now mandating reform to the claim staking process, how would your government move forward with modernizing the Mineral Tenure Act in the interests of all British Columbians and consistent with its legal duties to Indigenous nations?
First of all, we want to cut red tape and get back to basics. There's so many levels, and we want to go to a one permitting process for projects on the ground. And when people are waiting 5 and 6 and 7 years to get their permit approved, it's just untenable. So they're challenging it, and I think that that's right. So we need to sit down and have that discussion and look where we can cut red tape and get these people back to work and open the minds and the projects that they're looking for.
Nathan, what steps will you take to address the housing affordability crisis, particularly in rural and northern communities?
Yeah, so we're building rental units right now at 4 times the pace that Ontario is. My colleagues have talked about red tape a number of times. One of the challenges we had is municipal zoning laws. Much of the province within our municipalities is zoned for single family dwellings. And if anyone wants to put a duplex on, increase housing with a carriageway, you have to go through often a very, very lengthy process. Public hearings can take months and oftentimes years. So we changed that across the board for the province. That will greatly and has already greatly increased the supply. We've also put a small 2% speculation tax on those that are just flipping houses. Constantly flipping and using a house as an investment to make more money rather than what it should be, which is a home. That freed up 25,000 apartments in Vancouver alone. Unfortunately, some parties want to cancel that, which I have no idea why. We're into homes for people, not for speculators, and increasing the speed with which we can approve housing at our local government level is exactly what the housing developers have asked for.
Sharon, How will your government address rising costs and make life more affordable for British Columbians, particularly in northern BC?
Economic development. We talked about getting mines permitted. We've talked about resource development. We've talked about all these kind of things, and this is what we need. We need to have our communities healthy and safe, and we need to have more people back at work. And people are struggling. We need education for these people. Some of them are not educated enough to go back to their jobs. Kids are not being encouraged to go back and take up trades. So we're going to have to get education back up and running, and I've had conversations with teachers that are struggling with the education system as it is because it's not adequate. And I think we have to start at the ground level and get the kids interested in different things in school and get them educated so they have some kind of passion going forward for what they want to do.
Hey, we have two rebuttals. I think Rod beat you to the draw there, Nathan.
Well, there's one really simple way to bring cost of a lot of things down, inflation, the inflationary cycle, and the cost of building a home, all kinds of things would come down if we would get rid of the carbon tax. The carbon tax does nothing for the environment, but it raises the cost of everything you buy. If you buy nails to build a house, you're going to be paying a carbon tax on that. You buy food from the store locally, you're going to be paying a carbon tax on that. You heat your home, you're going to be paying a carbon tax. And federally, you know, we're even paying taxes on taxes. It's just something that we need to do. BC, I guess Eby has said that he would drop the carbon tax if Justin Trudeau approves. I don't think we need to wait for Justin Trudeau to approve anything. We should be making decisions in BC that are good for BC residents.
Nathan, thank you.
I love you, Rod. That's a fundamental misunderstanding of how taxes work, in the sense that if BC, like other provinces, were to not have a carbon tax and the federal tax still exists, the carbon tax still exists. You can't unilaterally drop a tax that's backstopped by the federal government, hence why Mr. Eby talked about this. But the question was around cost of living. When John Rustat was in cabinet, in the Liberal cabinet, not only did they introduce MSP premiums that charged us each every month, they doubled it over his time sitting at the table. The largest tax cut to the middle class in BC history was when the NDP government cut MSP payments to individual people. Affordable childcare is what helps cost of living. When we're able to say to people that our public insurance system at ICBC charges an 18-year-old driving a Toyota half what it does in the private system in Alberta, and Mr. Rustat says, let's go the private route for car insurance, I am baffled at a time of high prices why we'd want to charge people more to insure the cars for themselves and their kids. It makes no sense and is pure ideology.
Rod, how does your party plan to support the transition to cleaner energy sources while ensuring that BC's resource-based communities remain economically viable?
Of course, we all want cleaner energy, and I think the industry has been moving in that direction for years, partly because they can save money doing it. There is an illusion that carbon dioxide is somehow a pollution. It is not. Carbon dioxide is a natural part of our atmosphere. It's plants need it to grow. And so I think this whole, talking about carbon dioxide being a problem causing climate change is an illusion. Yeah, many scientists say it is, but there are many scientists who say, no, that's baloney. But we all want to use our resources carefully, wisely.
Nathan, does your party have a clear path to balancing the provincial budget? If so, how and when do you plan to achieve this?
Yeah, the provincial budget in the 7 years that the NDP has been in power ran surpluses in the first three, COVID hit in the fourth, then ran deficits back to surplus and then back to deficit. And it's significant. The deficit is significant right now, the largest in our province's history. And that's concerning to me. We are also in a strong position. We have the best GDP to debt ratio of any province in Canada right now, with the exception of, I believe, New Brunswick. So that means our borrowing capacity is strong because the amount of money that our province is able to pull in is strong. We need to be able to pull back to more of a balanced regime. The question is, if you're going to take in cuts, as the Conservatives have suggested in their healthcare plan of $4 billion, where do the cuts come? If we're going to cut, then you can't also say, well, we're going to fund long-term care and we're going to build new hospitals and we're going to hire more nurses. We've hired 14,000 new nurses in the last little while. We need to hire more. And so that's the challenge that you face, anyone would face as a provincial government.
And with the rebuttal?
Well, I guess that's my last rebuttal card, but Nathan, you know very well, it has been said over and over and over again, there are no cuts to healthcare coming from the Conservative Party. It is completely untrue and it has been stated repeatedly and repeatedly, yet the NDP keeps saying we're cutting healthcare, we're investing in healthcare. So I'm not sure where you're finding these numbers. I'd like to know where you're finding them from.
Sure. I'll come back to you.
Well, you told me that last July, too, and you still haven't given me the answers for the budget that I asked for, so I'm still waiting for that number.
This question is for Sharon. As an MLA, how will you support local governments in managing rising costs, including public safety, policing, infrastructure maintenance, and housing development?
Having been in local government for the better part of 20 years, that's kind of refreshing to go back there. The Conservative government has committed to putting $1 billion into infrastructure. And as we talked about with resource development, I firmly believe that the resource, when they're extracting the resources, minerals, forestry, whatever it may be, the portion of that has to come back to communities for investment. Back in the day, when I was still the mayor, they had appurtenancy clauses for communities, so the wood and the fiber was attached to those mills for security for the communities. And that is now gone. So you're seeing trucks up and down the road, traveling, which is not carbon neutral, all the way from Dees Lake, all the way down to Quesnel, when we've got mills along the way that they could be used from. So I'm not sure how that happened, but it certainly wasn't under the Conservative Party that did that. So investing in infrastructure is number one, and we're committed to doing that, and having a robust province with economic development that's going to help stabilize communities.
Nathan, as an MLA, how will you keep two-spirit LGBTQIA+ and transgender individuals safe and supported in our communities and in the province?
By actually backing up the notion of loving another human being, by loving another human being regardless of their sexual orientation, by not demeaning the questions that young people and all people face about their orientation by using words that we heard earlier today, I think it is so incredibly dangerous to marginalize, to discount, and to suggest that people, particularly young people, as they are discovering their sexual orientation, their sexual identity, that they are less than, and that they don't matter in a fundamental way to them. I believe that our schools, as counter to what Mr. Rustad said, are not indoctrination zones.
Sharon, what specific measures will you implement to improve access to education and skills training programs, particularly in remote and underserved areas of the province, such as Smithers?
Well, back in the day, we did have a skills training program at the college here in Smithers. We worked hard at getting that up and running, and we funded it. I think it was the Liberal government that funded it, I'm not sure. But we need to get back to skills training and put money into education. And campaigning out there, I've heard from several teachers in different communities that are talking about class sizes, talking about the type of education, and talking about curriculum, and also talking about funding. We don't have enough teachers and we don't have enough EAs to be able to go around to make this happen. Ongoing education out of high school, there used to be trades training, which should be encouraged and supported, and I'm fully prepared to do that.
Rod, how will your party support the growth of the tech and innovation sectors in BC, and how can these industries contribute to the economic diversification of the province?
It's extremely important that we interact as members of our modern society in the use of tech, but at the same time, we have to watch that it doesn't transmogrify or morph into a reliance on, for instance, digital currency. That's one of the threats that is coming from globalists around the world. They want to switch us over into digital currency, and then there's tracking mechanisms with that and so on. But we would work with tech industries and help them to get established.
Okay, so the first question, this is for Nathan's turn, I guess. So what role, if any, do you see for private health care in the medical system? How will you protect the timely access for people who cannot afford private access?
Yes, so I'm very concerned about the proposals, particularly from Mr. Rustad, for two reasons. To introduce more and more private health care into our system. One, is it far more expensive? If you're rich, private healthcare works great. For everybody else, as we've seen in other countries. It doesn't. Second is private health care will suck away nurses and doctors and technicians into the private health care system. And trust me, ain't no one setting up a private health care clinic in Telqua or Smithers or Burns Lake. They'll all be in the cities. Second, Sharon, you asked me where the $4.1 billion cut proposal.
Yes.
It's on page 17 of your health plan that Mr. Rustad introduced 2.5 weeks ago.
Well, I don't see it on mine.
Well, it's on page 17. So
17. I
will say, when a leader says we're going to cut $4.1 billion, writes it down and puts it on page 17 in their health plan, I'm going to believe them. That's the way I roll.
Well, Mr. Cullen, Mr. Rustad has said repeatedly there are no cuts to health care, over and over and over. How much clearer do we have to make it?
Well, it was
important. Sorry, Sharon, you're out of rebuttal cards, unfortunately, so...
That's too bad.
And the next question on the list is for you, Sharon. Now, what happened to democracy with all those torn down and ripped out NDP signs?
Yes.
I am very happy to answer that question, and I am very, very disturbed by what has been happening. And I mentioned this to Nathan on Saturday. My son came home from Hazleton the day after the writ dropped, and he says to me, "Mom, Nathan's signs are all down. What's happening?" And I said, "I don't know." I got him to send me pictures, and then the day after, Nathan Penner and I went into Telqua because there was more damage, not just to Nathan's signs, but to Rod's as well. And it was very disturbing to see the amount of damage, people driving over them. This is not democracy. This is not what we do. We debate. We talk. We try and engage with one another to find out what they're thinking and what you're thinking out there as well. Absolutely, this is wrong. And to have somebody defaced like that is completely... We actually made a call to the RCMP, and they were going to go out and try and investigate. But it's deplorable. This is not what we do in a democracy. This is not what we're teaching our children how to do. It's wrong.
Rod, it's false that drugs cause autism. This month is Autism Awareness Month. How will you educate yourself on autism and the challenges people on the spectrum face?
Bit of a misspeak on my point, but anyway, well, that's not what I meant.
Yeah, I should say right off the bat, I'm not a doctor, I don't claim to be, but there are many people who feel that autism has increased with actually vaccination. Some of our okay, there's a difference of opinion about that, but in the United States, RFK Jr.
I'm going to ask the crowd to please... Please be the rules and let Rod finish his speech.
You know, one thing that people must recognize is that when I was a kid, there was hardly any autism, and there's a lot now. There's a reason for that, and I believe it's an environmental reason. The 72 vaccinations that people have to get when they're little, some of those, there's a lot of evidence that that could be contributing to the autism problem. So, but I'm willing to do some more educating. If you want to, whoever's posted the question, I'm willing to have a conversation with you, and you can help me learn more about it. But it is a concern, and it's causing a lot of grief in our country.
Sorry, we're not taking crowds from the questions from the crowd here. So, please, if you do want to ask a question, go to the app. You can vote questions up and down, and I'm just taking the top question. So, Sharon. How are you going to make it easier for Smithers residents to have access to a family doctor?
Well, it's not just Smithers residents that need a family doctor. I live in Telqua and I need a family doctor too. We have to get the doctors back to work. We have to allow them to practice what they have been, what they were educated for, what they're wanting to do. We have to reduce the mandates, get rid of them so that they're welcome to come back to work and not have a registry to say what their medical circumstances are. I think that's none of our business. What we need to do is recruit. There are people in the communities now across the board in the region that are doctors and nurses, registered nurses that I know of, that need to be certified in the Canadian system, and it's taking way too long. So we need to streamline that system to get these people back to work. They're valuable to our society. They don't want to work in a mill. They don't want to be janitors. One of the ladies I know is a registered nurse, and she's a nanny. She's happy to be a nanny, but she has skills, and she came to Canada because she wanted to use those skills.
Rod, firearm regulations fall under federal jurisdictions. How will you address misinformation of responsibilities and limitations of an MLA on this issue?
I believe in something called the doctrine of the lesser magistrates. No matter where you are in society, if you're a premier, if you're an MLA, if you're a mayor, when the higher authority, higher ranking authority, such as the prime minister, does something that's wrong, and it's wrong for the people and violates their charter rights, it's a responsibility of the MLA, the premier, the mayor, fathers of homes, to speak up against it. And these attempts to grab Canadian firearms based on a very faulty understanding of what's going on in our society, I think it's good. I'm glad that Danielle Smith in Alberta has stood up on that issue against the impositions of Mr. Trudeau. They want to blame firearms for harms caused to people instead of blaming our crime level and our social structures that are leading people to do criminal acts. We need to enforce our criminal justice system, not take away firearms.
Back to this federal gun law thing, we're a country of laws. We don't get to pick and choose which laws we like and which ones we don't want to enforce, particularly if a law has been introduced to take AR-15s and handguns away from criminals. For someone to say, I want to be premier, as Mr. Rustad has said, as Rod, I guess you're saying, is that we just simply won't enforce laws because of who passed them. Parliament passed them. And they are meant and intended towards weapons that are used in assault-style weapons, not for hunting. Let's be clear, this is not a pick-and-choose kind of federation that we have. We need to be able to enforce laws that keep people safe and make sure that criminals don't get access to these types of guns.
It's a shame I don't have six more rebuttals.
Nathan, costs like the EHT, 5 paid sick days, and high minimum wage are killing business. What will you get rid of to help small businesses and Smithers?
Well, I think having 5 sick days is a good thing for workers, and I think it's ultimately a good thing for businesses. Because if a worker is showing up consistently sick to work and spreading illness, not so good. I think it's also a condition that we look at in society, and that every research has shown that the increase in minimum wage in BC has had a dramatically positive effect on the BC economy because of the ability of those workers to not make below minimum wage, which is poverty wages, their ability to actually go out and be consumers is greatly increased. So when we've done this research with the Chamber of Canada, the Chamber of Commerce here in BC, it shows that minimum wages have a net benefit effect because people who make minimum wage are much, much more likely to shop local than somebody at the very top end of the income bracket who take their money more often away. So I'm a believer in ending poverty, and one of the ways to do that is raise the minimum wage, which we've done.
Okay. Rod, how do you plan to promote schools as a safe space for young people with mental health problems, mental disabilities, the LGBTQ plus affiliations?
Every place should be a safe space for every British Columbia citizen. Let me be clear. It's not a matter of favoritism, Mr. Cullen was referring to earlier. I believe there is indoctrination going on in our schools. I don't blame the teachers. I blame Victoria. I blame the direction from the upper echelons of the NDP government, Adrian Dix, EB, and the rest, who are pushing an agenda, and it is filtering through. I think there's been a peer pressure for that, and some of it is coming through our education system. We should be teaching academics and trade skills, not gender orientation and that kind of thing.
Sharon, what would you do to revitalize forestry and address the impact from the old growth decisions?
Well, that's a good question. old growth is standing there. It's detrimental to the forest. When I was still in local government, we had these conversations about Tweedsmuir Park. If they would have actually harvested it at the time, they wouldn't have had a fire there because they wouldn't have dry standing timber. When we're cleaning the forest, when they're actually harvesting, they can plant different species that are more resilient to fire. And cleaning up the forest floor so that we're not going to be challenged with wildfires, I think, is another start. But forestry wants to start using old growth and clean it up so that we're not going to be targeted with wildfires.
Nathan, we pay the highest home heating costs with PNG, and fuel costs at the pump are ridiculous. What will the BC government do to help us here in the north?
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating in seeing that oil prices are $70-$73 a barrel. And I remember when they were at that price before, and gas was not $1.70, $1.80 at the pump. And the delta between that is what some people call inflation and I call greed and profit. That I've seen companies time and time again say, well, it's just inflation, it's some sort of global effect. Meanwhile, the quarterly reportings from Shell and on down the line show that they're making hand over fist. There is a windfall tax opportunity. It's a taxation policy that's not handled at the provincial level. I think we need better transportation opportunities. I'm very proud of the $10 million we put into the Telco to Smithers bike path that'll be completed hopefully next year. We also need better opportunities to get into vehicles that don't use gas, because that is something that is in our future. And we also need opportunities for people not to have to pay so much for those basic costs of living, like insurance, like childcare. And that's where the opportunities where the provincial government has leverage, and we've been doing much of that.
Sure. Rod, do you have a plan for how to connect with homeless people and reduce homelessness in places such as our local tent city?
Again, we need to stop enabling a lifestyle that is bad for them and bad for the rest of society. We need to provide mental health services where required so that people can get off drugs and start a new life. They probably need some training and various skills, but just allowing them to, basically vegetate there in a cold, damp environment with nothing exciting to do, no meaningful interaction with society, is bad for them and it's bad for us.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.